Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexities of marriages between straight women to gay or bisexual men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay man, bisexual man, and now transgender. So if you have any comments you'd like to make during this broadcast, you can write to me at bonk@aol.com if you'd like to ask our guest a question or ask me a question, bonkaye@aol.com. And I have a very special guest who is returning tonight, one of my favorite guests in the world because I've actually had the honor of meeting her in person and getting to know her for the last number of years, and she's like family to me. So I'd love to welcome back Patsy Ray Dawson. Patsy, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you, Bonnie. I realized the other day you and I've been, you've started interviewing me in December of 2010, so we've been at
this
a
while. That's a long time ago.
It is, yes.
Oh, my God.
And I'm tickled to be here with you.
Thank you so much, Patsy, because you really send sanity out to a lot of our women, because so many of the women that come to me are women who are Christian women who grew up within the Christian faith, all different kinds of Christian denominations, because everyone's a little bit different, you know, all the way from Southern Baptist to regular Baptist, Protestants, you know, all kinds of
right.
Christian religions, and there's so many different ones, but they all have the same key theory of when you get married, it's a lifetime commitment, and you take these vows saying for better or for worse, and you have to stick to those vows or otherwise you're disgracing yourself and your community. But that's not necessarily the case, right?
Right, you're right. Absolutely, that is not the case. And one thing, you know, that's planning on talking about tonight, I'm always saying God doesn't trap anybody in a sexless marriage. And as I've been researching this, he didn't do it in the Old Testament, and he doesn't do it in the New Testament. He has provided an escape from these marriages. If you can't turn it around, then he has provided the escape of divorce, and it's something that is honorable. I tell women it is as honorable as partaking of the Lord's Supper.
And I think that women have a hard time believing that because they've been told so much, you know, so differently all these years. Where do those concepts come from? I mean, you've studied Christianity your whole life. Where do they come from?
The concepts of forbidding divorce, is that what you're asking me?
Uh-huh.
Okay, basically it comes from Victorian morals, but even before then, in the first couple of centuries after Christ died, the church was predominantly Gentile. And when it became predominantly Gentile, they lost all the healthy sexual attitudes and activities of the Jews and the Israelites. They lost that good influence. And when it became predominantly Gentile, they looked out at what they would call the pagan world. And the pagans they worshipped virgins, and they also worshipped idols of prostitution. So these Gentile church leaders looked at that and they said, well, Christians ought to be better than the pagans who have their temples to virgins. So they started elevating virginity and practicing preaching celibacy even in marriage. And, of course, this is something that is totally contrary to what the Bible teaches. God spends more space in the Bible talking about the sexual relationship from a positive standpoint, not just the negative. And what we hear in the churches is the negative. We don't hear the positive. God has devoted a whole book, the Song of Solomon, to teaching the positive about sex. It's a woman's story of the woman is portrayed as the sexual person, and she's looking for a lifetime lover. And King Solomon he's seen her. To him, it was lust at first sight, and so she's weighing, it's her story, weighing his sensuous comments with her against her shepherd boyfriend who loved her as a person, who wanted to start a family with her, wanted to have a lifetime relationship with her. And it's a story that is teaching us how to find a lifelong sexual partner that is based on true love, where it's going to be a joyous relationship for a lifetime. And so that's God's plan, and he spends more time talking about that than he does subjection and leadership. This is what you hear in most of the churches, just pounding that topic. And if we had the right attitude towards sex, we would not have the problems we do with leadership and subjection, the abuses that go there. And because of this bad attitude towards sex, then they have to have, then divorce is kind of a natural follow-up with that. And becoming very rigid in their views of divorce, kind of knee-jerk type reaction, just grabbing at things rather than saying, okay, let's figure out what the scriptures teach on this, instead of trying to defend their positions. So, it's all tied together. I've started saying that if you don't appreciate how much God loves passionate sex, then you cannot appreciate divorce, because you're going to have a real narrow view of it. And just in my last newsletter this last week, I even went out on the limb a little bit more, and I said, if you can't appreciate how much God loves passionate sex and how much God hates sexless marriages, then you're not going to be able to understand God's teaching on divorce. And I have really come to that position, Bonnie, that God hates sexless marriages. They do so much harm to the children. I am just amazed, and it just breaks my heart all the time as I continue to read new studies about the damage that is done to these children who grow up in a home where you have one parent who does not love the other one emotionally nor sexually. Those children suffer. And so I've come to the position because of what I see in the Bible about what God is talking about, the harm done to these children, that God does really hate sexless marriages.
Well, Patsy, I have to agree with everything you always say because it only makes sense. But do you have a hard time from the church? Do they always challenge you or knock you down for the way you believe?
What I see is when I come out with some kind of a strong statement like the one I just made to you, there's tons of people just bailing off of my newsletter list. And I've had some of them, you know, make comments to me about divorce, and they're not willing to look at the scriptures a little bit differently, do the word studies, and, you know, all of it has to fit together. If we can't make it fit together, then we don't have the truth yet, and we need to keep searching. So yes, I get written off because I'm willing to speak up and against some of these things that I think are so damaging, not only to our Christian families, but they're damaging to society, because we should be a light unto our neighbors, and they should be able to look at us and see a family that displays love. You know, a husband and wife that are having regular sex, they just act differently. They talk differently than somebody who's frustrated. There's no comparison, and it's something you can see in a person's body posture that you know they have a good love relationship in that home.
I think that it was really distorted through so many years, where I can't speak for every, you know, sect of Christianity, but I know from my own, I have family members who are Catholic, even though, you know, I was raised Jewish. But, you know, they were taught from the time they were younger that the whole purpose of sex was just for procreation and wasn't to be there for pleasure. It was there so you can procreate. Have you heard that theory before?
Oh, yeah. In fact, on my website, if people want to go to my website, patsyraydawson.com, mm-hmm. and the Ray is the feminine spelling, R-A-E, so it's P-A-T-S-Y-R-A-E, Dawson, D-A-W-S-O-N.com. In the sidebar on the bookshelf, there is a free chapter from one of my books about Victorian morals. And it traces it through the centuries from these first few centuries after Christ died on up through where Queen Victoria made it politically incorrect to be, you know, to be sexually active with your mate. And so so I have all the references. Nobody has to take my word for anything. They can read the references. They can look at the Bible verses. They can look at the word definitions and trace that through the histories, how man's attitudes towards the sexual relationship has just gotten worse and worse and worse. And so that, you know, today people think that if the only way you can have any sexual fun is to be promiscuous, you know, that is really sad, because God created sex for us to enjoy for a lifetime. And, you know, science is just now starting to understand the hormones that are released during the sexual relationship. The woman, she is receiving the man's testosterone, and the man, and this is a good thing for her as she's receiving this, and the man, in his union with her being exposed to her hormones, it is also increasing his testosterone so that he is healthier. This affects his muscles, it affects his bones, it affects his heart. And these hormones are physically beneficial for men and women. It prolongs their life. The other day I read a statistic that if you are in a sexless marriage, it's going to cut 5 years off your lifespan because of the stress and the lack of the benefits that you get from that relationship, from the hormones. It makes your skin glow, because with all the heavy breathing and such, you're getting more oxygen and nutrients to your cells. So it's physically beneficial. But not only that, if you have a basic attitude of loving your mate, it's releasing additional hormones that make you even more loving toward your husband. That splashes over onto your children. They're not getting on your nerves like they would otherwise. You can see the cuteness in them. It makes the whole family touchy-feely when the husband and the wife are partaking of these hormones that God created for men and women to partake of for their whole lifetime. And they actually say, Bonnie, that if a husband and wife are having sex while she's pregnant, that that sex exercises her muscles and her pelvic floor so that it makes her childbirth easier. She's actually doing pre-childbirth exercises with her husband when they're having sex while she's pregnant. So God didn't design this just to get the woman pregnant. He designed it for her to be enjoying it all the way through this so that she's going to have a easier, more healthy childbirth. And then when she's nursing her children, you've got all these hormones that are making her more loving towards her child. They're also making her more loving towards her husband. And there's a lot of women who have their first vaginal orgasm when they are nursing their child because of these hormones and just all the love that it is creating, that sort of thing. So, you know, in teenagers know when mom and dad don't get along. And when mom and dad have a great relationship, they enjoy their teenagers more. They're setting a wonderful example for their teenagers. And they're going to have an easier time with those teenagers just because there is love in the air in that family, and teenagers respond to that.
And I think staying on that same thought, Patsy, that so often, you know, children model their futures after their parents. So if they see that you have loving, caring parents and loving in all ways, then that's the kind of mate they're going to look for. If they see her with somebody who lacks affection, who doesn't understand the meaning of, you know, passion mixed with compassion in a relationship to make love, then they're going to, you know, look for the same kind of thing.
Right.
You know, they're going to find the same kind of relationship in their future. I always call it the monkey see, monkey do, monkey act just like you syndrome.
Right.
That's my word for it, that whatever you see, you model in your own. They say that a lot of children who get in, a lot of women who marry abusive men is because there was domestic violence going on in their own home, and that became their norm. And, you know, we pick on things that are normal to us or comfortable, so when we see there's a lack of affection in our own homes growing up, that when we find someone who treats us that way, it's acceptable to us because we don't know any differently. And that's why I say parents are so responsible for the outcome of their children's happiness. And when they don't see you being happy, they're not going to be happy when they make their choices. Do you agree with that?
Yes, and the children don't know how to be happy. They don't know what the ideal is. They don't know what to look at. And if they're hearing dad talk to mom in an ugly tone of voice all the time, then if their date is talking to them in an ugly tone of voice, they may not even notice it, you know, because they've learned to tune it out at home. That's just the way dad talks. And then on a date, if he's using a disrespectful tone, you know, a woman who's raised in a normal, loving home, if her date starts using a disrespectful tone to her, she is going to pick up on that immediately, and she's going to either find out what's wrong or she's going to want to get away from him. But when we grow up in that kind of home, our ears don't even, they're not even attuned to that anymore because we've learned to tune it out. And that's what happens to our children. I was reading a book the other day talking about that children who grow up in these homes, they usually either become codependent or narcissistic. And the codependent ones are the ones who learn how to kind of manipulate whichever parent is unloving to kind of stay under the radar so that they're not into trouble all the time. And of course, you know, it's real easy for them then to marry someone just like that narcissistic parent because they're looking for love. On a subconscious level, they're looking for love. The kids who turn out to be narcissists, what this author was saying, they're the ones who don't have this intuitive instinct on how to kind of get along with the parent, and so they're more the ones who are kind of rocking the boat. They're looking for love, and maybe they're acting out to get that love, and they actually are suffering more as a child than the codependent ones. And then they grow up, they become the narcissist who marries a codependent, and a lot of times they're going to be happy because they're in control, and the codependent then in a marriage suffers a whole lot more than the narcissist does. But these marriages are so harmful to the children. I mean, it's just heartbreaking to know what's happening to these children, that they don't have a choice. Their brains don't really develop to solve problems until about the age of 25. And by then, they're trapped in a marriage just like what mom and dad had and may not have any clue on how to get out of it or what to do about it.
Well, they probably think they're stuck in it just like mom and dad were, because mom and dad are still there, right?
Yeah, yes, yes, yes. And what I'm seeing, Bonnie, is that the longer these marriages go on, the more horrible they become. As you know, I've got a survey on my website for sexless marriages, and a lot of your women have participated in it. And I know your women because, you know, one of my questions is, were you referred by Bonnie Kay? So I know who they are, and then a lot of times they will mention that their husband is gay. And the marriages of these women who have been married for a long time, some of them 25 years, the things that they check in this survey, their marriages are just, they're intolerable. They're just horrible. They're just beyond description. And they didn't start out that way. They just gradually get worse and worse and worse. And we don't understand that when we're in a bad situation. We may think, well, it's tolerable now. If it doesn't get any worse than this, I can deal with it. And what we don't know is sin always grows. It is always going to get worse. And there's just no way around it. And that's one message I would like to get out to the women is, just because you think it's tolerable right now, you don't know what pain is. What you're going to experience later is just, you cannot fathom it.
Because all of this abuse, which could be blatant or it could be not as blatant, it could be more subtle, but it is abuse. It does take a toll on you over time. And even though you may be suppressing your feelings while you're living through it in order to get through it because you don't know how to get out of it, so you feel stuck and you can't do anything, so you suppress whatever feelings you have, it does catch up with you. In time, you're going to suffer through post-traumatic stress disorder. You're going to have things triggering all your bad memories. You know, you have to be able to deal with these problems and get out of them. You know, one thing I'll say about women who come to me, for the most part, you know they have to get out. It's not like they're fighting to stay in something that's bad. But a lot of times they go through that inner conflict, especially as Christians, that they were taught that, you know, for better or for worse. And I always say, well, it wasn't for straight or for gay. Better and worse doesn't mean straight and gay. Better and worse means if you're sick. It means if things go bad in business. It doesn't mean if your sexuality is not what you were intending it to be. Am I correct in assuming that?
Yes, absolutely. And one thing I'd like to do for your Christian women, Bonnie, is just give them two scriptures that I think are so simple to show them that God absolutely does not trap them in these marriages. And the first one is an Old Testament passage that is real easy to see, and then I'm going to show them where it is in the New Testament. And that's a passage that's in, if they want to write it down, it's Exodus 21, verses 10 through 11. And I'm not going to read that. That's a passage where it talks about that a slave wife, if her husband does not give her three things, she can divorce him. So if her husband doesn't give her food, she can divorce him. If he doesn't give her clothing, she can divorce him. If he does not give her enough sex, she can divorce him. Now, the beautiful thing about this, Bonnie, is the passage tells us that this man, if he marries another wife and so he quits having sex with his slave wife, she can divorce him. But the Jews practiced divorce for these three reasons up until 100 years after Jesus died. The Jews commonly practiced scriptural divorce if the man refused, and they applied it both ways. They said if this is true with the lowest person in society, a female slave, then it is true for free women and it is true for men. So they practiced divorce. Men and women, there are historical documents of them giving divorces for these three reasons. So if the person quit having enough sex, then they could take them before the court and they could get a divorce. And of course, you know how the Jews, a lot of times, you know, when Jesus told them to keep the Sabbath, then they had all their rules about what you could do and what you couldn't do on the Sabbath. And so it turns out that they had their little rules about, okay, what's not enough sex. And this is really kind of interesting to see how they obeyed that passage. They said if a man was unemployed, he was required to have sex with his wife daily. Now, isn't that something? Yes.
Yes, that's what I've never heard of in all my years.
Well, if he was a worker.
I must have been reading the wrong edition of the Bible somehow.
What I am reading, Bonnie, is there's some new they're constantly discovering new documents, historical documents, and they're translating them and stuff. And so I'm reading a Jewish scholar's what he's teaching, showing about how they dealt with divorce in Old Testament times and New Testament times. And so he's saying there are the documents out there showing where the scribes had this written down, had all these rules. If he's unemployed, he's supposed to have sex with his wife daily. If he's a worker, he's supposed to have sex with her twice a week. Wow, wouldn't that be nice in a lot of these marriages? If he was an ass driver, he was supposed to have sex once a week. And the reason they said that was because he would be on the road about a week at a time. So when he got home, he was expected to be making love with his wife. If he was a camel driver, then have sex once in 30 days, because their trips usually lasted longer, about 30 days. If he was a sailor, once in 6 months, because they usually came home once every 6 months. So when that man was home, he was expected to be having sex with his wife. And if he wasn't doing that, she could divorce him. So
how about Patsy? I mean, to me, there's a big difference between having sex and making love. So,
well, okay,
you know,
I agree.
Just not the sexual act, right?
Okay, yes. And the Jews understood that.
Mm-hmm.
They understood the emotional part of sex. And so if the guy is having sex with his wife, but he is emotionally neglecting her, she could still divorce him scripturally. They understood that this emotional bonding had to go with the sex. So they made the distinction between those two.
Yeah.
So at least
I can't understand why, you know, other people, I never hear anybody else discussing this except you. Why hasn't this caught on, to be honest with you, because I think it really should be catching on like wildfire.
I agree with you, but you know why you're hearing me discuss it? Is because you keep having me on your program and you keep asking me questions I can't answer that stay in the back of my mind. And then when I'm reading stuff, I'm thinking, oh, wow, here's the answer to Bonnie's question.
I'm saying that you are just so revolutionary in your thinking. I mean, are there other people who are thinking like you do, like ministers in church? Do you have any support?
Not that I'm aware of, but I do have a lot of preachers and elders who take my newsletter and support me that way. So I hope to eventually write a book on divorce. I'm still doing studying and learning, but it's going to take some significant work. And so, I would appreciate people's prayers for me in that regard, because I am a thorough student, and it just takes a lot of work to plow through material and just make sure I'm treating it carefully and correctly, that sort of thing. But let me give you a New Testament verse to go right along with this.
Yeah, let me hear the New Testament verse. Go ahead.
So what I just said was that the Jews practiced this divorce for these three reasons.
Right.
Up until 100 years after Jesus died. What that means is that when the Apostle Paul wrote his letters, he understood all of this. You know, he was proud of being an Israelite and being brought up in the law, and he understood all of this. And when you come to 1 Corinthians 7, 12 through 16, where it's talking about a Christian being married to a non-Christian, the difference was for the Jews, they were not supposed to marry non-Jewish people. That was forbidden. They were supposed to divorce them. So now in the Christian age where you have Gentiles and Christians, not Christians, Gentiles and Jews who would become Christians and maybe their spouse would not become a Christian, the question, the logical question was, do I have to divorce my non-Christian mate because now I'm a Christian? And in the Old Testament, the Jews could not be married to Gentiles. So Paul is saying, no, you don't have to divorce them on one condition. If they are content to live with you being a Christian. And we tend to think that, you know, that word live, that's kind of a common word, and it's real easy for us to not realize what all's involved in that. But when you look up that word, it's talking about living as a family. And we've already seen in the Old Testament, when you had a family relationship, you had food, you had clothing, you had lovemaking. And so Paul would have understood that. So if you're a Christian and you're married to a non-Christian, you have the right to expect the women, they were supposed to prepare the food, they were supposed to take care of the clothing, and they were supposed to be there for their husband sexually. So it was equal in this way. So when he says they're content to live with you, Paul understands that food, clothing, and lovemaking is what makes a husband and wife. And that word live has actually in the meaning in Thayer's, which is a Greek dictionary, he says living as husband and wife. So he's assuming in this relationship you're expecting your husband to be there for you sexually. And if he's not being there for you sexually, he's not being content to live with you as a Christian. You have the right to expect those things. And so many preachers and elders, when a woman comes to them and complains about her husband not being there sexually, they tell her to go home and be submissive. They don't have a clue about how important the sexual relationship is because of all the hormones to bless that husband and wife and to bless their children. And Paul says if he's content to live with you so that together you're providing food, clothing, and together you're having sex, then you let him depart. And that word depart is our word for divorce. It's you let him be divorced from you. Now, some people have the idea he's got to be the one that's going to divorce you, and I'm going to just give you a third scripture on this, just a three-scripture argument. And this is 2 Timothy 3, 1 through 5, and that's the scriptures that my survey is based upon going through these sins. Sin number 9 is without natural affection. That word means to have love of family, that somebody who does not have the love of family is a sinner. And these verses are talking about people who are pretending to be Christians, but they're not acting like Christians. And at the very end, at the very end of it, God says, avoid such people as this. God says, stay away from people without unnatural affection, even if they're pretending to be a Christian. So if a woman is married to a man who says he's a Christian, but he's not there sexually for her, God says, avoid him. Get away from him. He doesn't even begin to know what being a Christian is all about. So what I would encourage...
I think a lot of times people are really confused, Patsy, because, you know, I think as women, I have found this as a general pattern, not just with gay husbands, but with bad relationships of other kinds and natures, that women who are loving, caring people always feel that, you know, they can fix somebody. In other words, if you have a guy who's not affectionate, well, if you love him enough, he's going to become affectionate. If you have a guy who's, you know, narcissistic, well, if you teach him love and support, he won't be a narcissist. We're always looking at these broken men and thinking, you know, they're fixed, you know, they're a home repair project. Fix up the men so they'll be happy and then you'll be happy with them. You know, I think that part of it is maturity and going through bad relationships, where women have to realize that some men are just not fixable. They're just broken men, and they're never going to be the man you need. And that doesn't necessarily mean he's gay. There's lots of other broken men who can't be
right.
men, you know, husbands to women. But
right.
I think that we just keep trying so hard because the Bible is misinterpreted. You have preachers there who are battering women down, saying that,
yes.
you know, it's your responsibility to make your husband happy, and if he's not happy, then you're doing something wrong. I mean, I've heard it all from my Christian women, you know, all the things
yeah.
they've been told, and by Christian so-called counselors who are misleading them totally into a life of doom by forcing or pushing them to stay with these guys, saying that, you know, you're their hope, you're their salvation, you took a vow to God to stay with them no matter what. And, you know, it's really hard fighting this ignorance within the Christian community, you know, with ideas like you have, which makes so much sense. And I always tell women, even though I'm not a Christian, I know enough about Jesus and Christianity to know that Jesus would never want people to suffer the way our women suffer. This is not his goal, was to, you know, have
right.
women sit and go to bed crying at night and punish, get feeling punished all the time. This is not what love is about, and that's not what God is about. I mean, Jesus is about love. He's not about punishment, right?
Right, and in this verse in 1 Corinthians 7 that I was referenced, it says, you let him divorce because God has called you to peace. He hasn't
uh-huh.
called you to. He has not called you to suffer. He's called you to peace. And what I would say in trying to fix these guys, Jesus could not fix everybody when he was here on earth.
Uh-huh.
He was a perfect individual, and he wanted
uh-huh.
to fix everyone. He said that. You know, he said, I would have taken you as a mother hen gathers her chicks, but you would not. And he recognized the other person's free will choice. We have a free will choice in our obedience to God, and Jesus did not take that away from anyone. And we, as earthly human wives, we cannot take that away from our spouse. God
uh-huh.
created us so that we could reject him. He created us so that we could say, God, I hate you. I don't want to do anything you say. And just totally reject him, because if God had made us so that we had to obey him and made us so that we had to love our wife or our husband, we'd just be like a vacuum cleaner. You plug it in and turn it on, and it sucks up dirt. And it doesn't
uh-huh.
care who it's sucking up dirt for. It doesn't have a choice. But God
uh-huh.
created us where we have a choice. And we cannot take our husband's or our wife's choice away from them. We can only make our own choice, and we can try to make our choice so that it makes it easy for them to make the right choice. But here in this passage in 2 Timothy 3, 1 through 5, God says, recognize these people. Recognize these people who are without natural affection and avoid them. Get away from them, because
mm-hmm.
they are not going to change unless they want to change. And this book that I'm reading that has to do with codependency and narcissism, this counselor says he has lots of codependents come to him trying to become better and to do better, but it is very rare for a narcissist to seek to be better, because their self-images are so fragile, they cannot hardly
uh-huh.
admit that they are wrong, and they're not willing to change. And
no, that's
you know, and while a woman is trying to change her husband, her kids are getting older and they're being damaged. You know, at some point, and sooner is better than later, as far as I'm concerned, from what I'm seeing, is she's got to say, you know, look, fella, it's time to wake up and make your choice. You're either going to be a husband and a father to these children, or you're going to go your own way. And it's your choice, and I may grieve for a long time over the choice you make, but it is your choice. And I have read that it usually takes a person about 3 marriages before they figure out what's wrong with them on why they're marrying these kind of people. And it's usually when they start dealing with their upbringing and how it has affected them and start getting honest with the kind of home they grew up in, then they start to change, and then they start to, where their eyes open, where they can hear the disrespectful talk that before they did not hear. And so, you know, it's a growth process, and these women, part of getting out of this situation is doing what they need to do to heal their souls. You know, Bonnie, one question I have on my survey I got from you in your newsletter, you're talking about their crushed feminine spirit. And so I ask, I have a section of questions where I'm asking different, you know, how is this affecting you? And I have that in there. And every single woman checks that, and also put the men's up there because men are in sexless marriages too. So put up their crush. Is your masculine spirit crushed? And everyone always checks if they're a woman. They check that their feminine spirit is crushed. If they're a man, they check that their masculine spirit is crushed. These kind of marriages are so harmful to the person. And another question I ask in this same series. Are you rising to your full potential as a Christian? And they'll tell me no on that. Are you rising to your full potential as a parent? No. As an employee? No. As a person? No. These kind of marriages are so damaging that the person doesn't reach their full potential in any area of their life. They are so weighed down.
You had really written something so beautiful that we had talked about, you know, a couple years ago. And I really felt the same way about myself, you know, in many cases that, you know, when you're living in a damaging marriage, you know, you don't have time to focus on the needs of your children. You're just focusing on survival.
Right.
And that you really do undue harm to these kids. And I think that both of us can, you know, attest to that because you're always running in circles trying to make something work that can't work. And
yes.
Instead of worrying about their needs and, you know, their happiness, we're just trying to keep the partner happy and, you know, thinking that if he could be happy, then everyone will be happy. And you're always playing like dodgeball, kicking the ball,
right.
The ball being kicked at you and you have to jump over it, jump around it. And the ones who are really harmed through this all are the children. You know, they are suffering because children really internalize when there's fighting going on or unhappiness in a household. Even though parents don't realize this until, you know, it happens and I have to keep showing it to them. And I'm the first to say, you know, I told you so on this particular issue because I hate when people linger longer than they need to in a destructive situation. But children do internalize this. They feel like if their parents are not happy that they are the failures, that they're the ones that cause the break, you know, the breakdown in the marriage. Because when parents fight, it's always over the children. So, you know, that seems to be a common fighting ground. So that's why children always feel very destroyed through destructive marriages, whether it's to a gay man, a straight man who has issues, narcissists, sociopaths. You know,
right.
There are women, there are many unsavory men out there. It's not that you have to have another gay husband. You know, you can find plenty of men who are like vultures waiting for you,
right.
Circling overhead.
Right.
When they see a woman who's vulnerable, they're waiting to swoop down and grab you, and you're so desperate and needy for love and attention, you mistake that love and attention, thinking that's what it is, when it's just total control. And these guys are out there just looking for somebody to control, because that's what their happiness is built on.
Yeah.
And you're right, you don't see it in, you know, the men in the beginning, but you keep, you know, repeating this pattern because you haven't healed yourself. You haven't gone for help to see why you're doing these things, right?
Yes, yes. And what I tell women is to step out of your pain and into your children's pain. Look at their eyes. See the sadness in their eyes. See the sadness in their expressions. Step into their pain and see what's going on with them to help you make some healthy decisions for your children. And what you're talking about with children seeing their parents fight, even some of these women, from what I'm seeing on the survey, the fighting stopped long ago, especially in these older marriages, because they've given up. So they're no longer fighting about this. But they're depressed. They're weighed down. And kids pick up on that. Kids kids notice things that parents don't begin to notice. They hear dad's ugly tone of voice talking to mom that she doesn't hear. They hear that, and they lose respect for her, but they also get numb to that kind of voice so that they can marry someone. Boys will marry a girl who is disrespectful and tears them down because they're so used to that that they don't even hear it, but still it cuts into their soul and into their subconscious and hurts them.
Uh-huh.
It's just really sad all the way around because, you know, you're not looking, you know, to be a bad parent in any way. You love your children. You want things to work out. But unfortunately, you know, when you're trying to make everything work out, nothing works out. Everything just falls apart because I don't know how you feel on this, but I'll tell you one thing. When women say to me, I put on a good act for my kids, they don't know how I really feel. I don't believe that. I'm sorry. I can't believe that they don't hear you crying when you're crying or that, you know, you can't communicate with them because you're in shock or you're hurting. I feel that you can only hide so much that children are very tuned into how your feelings are and that you can't
right.
really hide. Do you agree with that?
Yes, absolutely. The only person they're fooling, they're putting on the act for is themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you've got a woman who is making love regularly with her husband, she just treats her children differently. She's just
mm-hmm.
got a sparkle about her. She's got a happiness about her. They're not getting on her nerves. Everybody's not walking on eggshells, and that's what's happening in these marriages. The kids are walking on eggshells. The wife is walking on eggshells, and nobody is authentic. Nobody is their genuine self. They have put on a mask to keep daddy happy, so to keep things going or to keep mom happy,
mm-hmm.
because she's depressed. Everybody's wearing a mask, and nobody is... They're only fooling themselves. They're not fooling. The kids are picking up that things aren't like they should be. And they're not being loved. Kids just need a ton of love. They need a ton of touching. They need to be laughing with mom and dad. They need to be doing fun things with mom and dad. They need to be having some good one-on-one times with their parents. And those things aren't happening because everybody is walking on eggshells, and, you know, kids can't be kids because if somebody's unhappy, the least little thing is going to get on their nerves and maybe make them be snappy or whatever. But kids are just missing out on a lifetime of growing up in a happy home and being formed and shaped by that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just want to talk for a few minutes about your website. So if everybody could just make a note of this, because Patsy's website is just beautiful and so informative. And once again, you can get there by going to patsyraydawson.com. If you're listening to this broadcast, then you have the spelling of Patsy's name, so it's on the website, patsyraydawson.com. And on Patsy's website, there's so much information. First of all, Patsy has a newsletter called Embarrass the Alligator. Patsy, I just love the name of that title. Can you explain to people? I love hearing your explanation on what that means.
Well, that title kind of came from a preacher that was telling me about husband and wife that were sitting in his office complaining about marriage problems, and the husband was crying and the woman was stone-faced. And he said that woman had been trying to get her husband's attention for years, that they had a serious problem. And he was happy, so he wasn't paying any attention to what she would say, until finally the woman does something so outrageous that it would embarrass an alligator. And she finally had his attention, and she's ready. She has so closed up her heart to this problem that she's like stone, and she's on her way out the door, and the husband is there crying, and it's essentially too late for the marriage. So embarrass the alligator is, it is time to do the outrageous thing, whatever it takes, to embarrass that alligator that we have a serious problem, and if we don't take care of it, then it's going to, our marriage is not going to survive. So it's time to embarrass the alligator while you've got time to save your marriage. And I have on that front page of embarrasstheAlligator.com is my second website, the story of a lady that I was working with that finally embarrassed her alligator. I don't remember what it was he was going on about and stuff, but she finally just started screaming at him, "Shut up, shut up, shut up." And then ran out of the room, got in the car, she drove off, and he did not know where she went. He did not know if she was ever going to come back. And he got on the internet and sent me an email, and he said, "I want to buy a copy of every one of your books." And she finally had his attention that he had problems. And so sometime later, they were in the house, and he happened to notice that the tea kettle was going, and she had forgot to turn the tea kettle off. His first reaction was to get angry at her, and then he decided that instead of getting upset, he could make her a cup of tea, so which was what she was wanting to do in the first place. So he made her a cup of tea, and he took it to her, and he told her what the deal was, and she said, "Wow," she said, "you impress me a whole lot more by making a cup of tea for me than shouting at me." So that was
right.
A husband that had to be embarrassed to wake up.
So this newsletter, which is filled with wonderful information, on Patsy's site, you can just click in and ask to be on her mailing list. Also on here, there's the survey that you've been doing that you can participate in, because this is a survey that really gives you lots of insight. It's giving Patsy lots of insight on best ways to help Christian women. And, you know, the important survey says, learn what you're up against. Take this groundbreaking survey to open your eyes to the 24/7 clustered love sins common to sexless and sex inappropriate marriages. Then you can begin to solve core problems, and you know, you can click in there to take the survey. Now, are the results anywhere, Patsy?
No, I'm wanting to publish that, but I just something that it's going to be kind of, in some ways, kind of a huge project, and I haven't done that.
Uh-huh.
But I am in some of my newsletters sharing a bunch of the results, so I'm kind of doing it that way.
And
I might tell your readers that when they finish the survey, there's six parts. It is a lengthy survey because we're really getting down to the nitty-gritty, and it is going to open your eyes. It's going to help you get past things that you gloss over maybe because of your upbringing and don't really
uh-huh.
realize how serious they are. There's six parts. When you finish part number three, you're going to get a free ebook on Everyone is an Adult Child, and it's going to tell you that your three responsibilities your parents had toward you and your three responsibilities that you have toward your parents, even if your parents are, you know, if you grew up in a dysfunctional home, you're going to learn God knows that and what God's view is of your responsibility. Then when you finish part number five, you'll get another free ebook about codependency and narcissism, and it has a two-page little chart in there that you can go down and check the things you do, check the things your spouse does, and kind of help open your eyes even more. Start the healing is what I'm trying to do with these books. I use that book, that little e-booklet with my clients, and they will fill it out, and they will say, "Wow, I see myself and my spouse all over the place." And it kind of gives
uh-huh.
them an idea of where to start. Then when they finish part number six, they will get a e-booklet on helping them analyze their marriage. What did you learn? Here are some suggestions about what you can do to start correcting the situation. So... So I've designed this to be kind of a self-assessment and to help them reflect. It's got Bible scriptures in it. And like I say, it's going down 2 Timothy 3, 1 through 5. I'm using those verses. There's 19 sins in those verses. And so I cover all 19 of those sins with questions for them to answer to see if that's the sin they're dealing with. Because these sexless marriages, being a sexless marriage, a dead bedroom, it's not isolated. It is
uh-huh.
part of a cluster of sins. And you need to open your eyes to it, and you need to be dealing with the whole package and not just that one thing that is the most obvious thing that is wrong with the marriage.
Now, I want to let people know that you do one-on-one coaching or divorce coaching to help women get through these marriages and to move on to get free of this, the shackles that are around them from, you know, destructive marriages. And, you know, on the website, you can go right there to coaching. And, you know, Patsy has the different information about it, Christian divorce coaching, sexless stories, you know, deal with people and all kinds of really important information that affects our lives. And Patsy can do coaching, you know, by phone. Do you do Skype coaching too, Patsy?
No, I haven't done any of that.
Just by phone coaching. Okay, so once again, if you're on the fence or you're not sure how to get over the fence because of the way that you've been brought up or your, you know, leanings or beliefs, Patsy's really wonderful in helping women to get past that and to help you really see, you know, how you can get take control of your life if you've lost the control. I think so many of our women have lost control of their lives because they're so busy trying to keep up with their spouses that are, you know, and it's never going to happen, and they just get so beaten down and so depressed that they don't even know how to get out of it.
Yeah.
So you always can use all the support you can get, and like I say, Patsy is a wonderful coach to help Christian women to get past that, and you can certainly get in touch with her through her website, or if you are having problems with that, you can write to me at bonk@aol.com, and I'll certainly forward your information to Patsy. So, Patsy, I want to thank you so much. The hour went so quickly with you here, and I'm really excited you're here because you and I were both talking earlier. Now that it's summertime, after next week, I'm going to have my pal Deborah Sutton join me on the show, and then I'll be taking a break for about 6 weeks. I'm going to be rerunning the best of our shows, including Patsy, you'll be in one of them. And, you know, just to let people know that they can stay in touch and hear the shows over again, the more you hear them. You know, I have so many that you can find on Blog Talk Radio for the last number of years, and there's so many different kinds and different speakers, and it's really important, you know, to get that kind of encouragement and support. So I will be taking a little break during the summer and working on redoing my first original book, The Gay Husband Checklist for Women Who Wonder. It was actually printed in 1999, and so much has changed in nearly 20 years. And so I'm going to be updating my book, and so it'll be presented again with all the new information that I've learned about over the last 20 years from tens of thousands of women who have crossed my path on the Internet. So I'm really excited about that. And Patsy, when I come back in September, I hope you'll be one of my first guests again.
I would love to do that. And
so
I'm excited about you doing that book again, Bonnie. That's really a classic.
It is. You know, I've been rereading it, and I think, you know, there's so many updates since I originally put it out. I stand by what I wrote then. But, you know, I took some different views. I've learned so much in the last 20 years from our listeners, from members of my support network, from the children especially. My views have desperately changed on whether or not your children should know. You know, I used to say, well, it depends on how old they are and what the circumstances are. It's a new world today where people accept things that they were never able to accept before. And, you know, a lot of things have changed, and so some of my ideas have to change with them, and they have changed. I write about it in my newsletters, but I want to update the book, so I'm really excited about that. And, you know, I want to just let my listeners know that next week Deborah Sutton will be here to end my season. And I'm really looking forward to talking to Deborah about her new book because there's so much great information to follow through on what, you know, Patsy Ray is talking about as far as destructive kinds of behaviors in marriages, whether it's a narcissist or a sociopath or passive aggressive. All of these play into your marriages. So I'm really excited Deborah will be here with us next week. I always like to send love out to my nephew Scott. Scott, who listens to this show and always learns something from it. And it was his birthday this week, so happy birthday, Scott, to you. And to all of our listeners, all I can say is stay in touch. Write to me if you need me. And life will go better as soon as you let it go better. And go to Patsy's website, patsyraydawson.com. Patsy, I love you. Thank you for being part of our helper here who, you know, is always open to helping people. You have lots of books. free publications, newsletters. Take advantage of what Patsy has to offer. She's been doing this for years, and she knows what she's doing. So I love you, Patsy.
Well, I love you too, Bonnie, and I appreciate you stretching my mind, asking me questions I can't answer.
That's all right. By the next show, you'll have the answers, right? All right, everybody. Have a great week. Happy July 4th to everyone. Stay safe.
Yeah.
And good night.
Okay. Good night.
Good night.